Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Tech Doctor podcast. This is Robert, the Tech Doctor. So glad you joined us this time. We're going to have fun. We're going to take a virtual trip over to Australia, where it's actually Monday morning, and I'm recording this on Sunday night here in the U.S. And I've got with me a man who has really made himself known in the Apple community as one of the leading experts in making Apple technology accessible for people who are blind. His name is David Woodbridge. David, I'm honored that you were willing to join me here on the Tech Doctor, and welcome to the podcast. Please say hi and tell us a bit about yourself, if you will.
Sure. Yep. Thanks for having me. My name, as Robert said, is David Woodbridge, and I live in a very small town, if you like, called Gosford, which in my terms is probably about 80 kilometres outside of Sydney, going north, in New South Wales as a state. And I currently work for a charity called Vision Australia, and we have branches basically all over the eastern seaboard of Australia. So we have offices in Victoria, New South Wales, Canberra, and Queensland. And basically, my job entails quite a few bits and pieces. So, for example, my main job is on the Adaptive Technology Help Desk, and that's for any blind, low vision, or sighted person ringing up and wanting to know about adaptive technology or to learn about all the different types of products. And that can include various things such as digital set-top boxes, smartphones, Windows computers, Mac computers, Android operating systems, if I want to get more specific. Of course, my love of my life, iPhone, iPod Touch, iPad, Apple TV, all that sort of stuff. So that's one part of my job. Second part of my job is, I guess, my evaluation work, where I have to evaluate upcoming new technologies and let other staff and the community know about those types of technology. The third part of my job is to give presentations at conferences or for internal presentations on adaptive technology. And the fourth part of my job, which is the one that I absolutely love doing, is, of course, doing all the podcasting and demonstrations that I do mainly on Mac, but I have been known to do one or two on Android and Windows. But primarily, most of my podcasts have been done on all the Apple product range from your iPod Nano right up to the iMac, etc.
Wow, what a job. I mean, it sounds like a dream job in some ways, getting to work with all that technology, but it also sounds like a terribly busy time when you talk about a 4 or 5 or more part job. It sounds like a full week for you every week.
It is pretty busy. The fact of it is, though, that basically I have my job as my hobby or my hobby as my job. I can't decide which is which. And it's never the same. I get up in the morning and sometimes I'll have the unfortunate thought of, well, I wonder what I'll do today. And sure enough, when I get to work, there's something new arriving in my email box or somebody's tweeted me about a new product to evaluate. So it's never, ever boring. And it's always fun. And I've been doing this job now for just on 22 years, which sounds quite a long time, but when you consider that everything changes almost every single day and there's always something new to talk about, it's just ongoing fun.
I just love that idea of not being sure whether it's your job or your hobby, because that does make it fun and exciting and interesting. And I hear so many people in my business talking about how they just don't like their job. They just hate going to work, but it sounds like for you it's just the opposite. And that's wonderful when you can have a combination like that and have it been your career for 22 years. That's terrific.
My boss lately said, now I want you to take a break away from work and I want you to stop !! working. And I said, well, the part of the problem with that is that you're asking me orders also to stop my hobby. And while I've been away from work this week on holidays, and I've stopped doing official work things, but I spent last week producing 15 podcasts.
You sure did.
On Mountain Lion. But the thing about it was that it didn't feel like work. It just feels like sitting down at the computer and just sharing information with people around the world. And it's not stressful. I mean, yes, it does take a while to produce podcasts, edit them, post them, everything else. But you sort of fall into this really weird sense of relaxation when you've got the microphone in front of you, you're pacing your words, you're trying to make things, everything structured and make sense. And it actually feels like I'm doing some sort of relaxation thing for the couple of hours that I'm actually doing the podcast. It's very weird.
The thing that I really appreciated so much about those 15 podcasts from last week was the fact that you were able to post them on the AppleViz site on the very morning that Mountain Lion was released. So we actually had podcast about what we could expect in terms of accessibility in Mountain Lion and about how the major new features worked with VoiceOver. And that was really wonderful that it was right there. I actually listened to your podcast before I downloaded and installed Mountain Lion. So thanks for doing that. It was great timing.
Thanks for that. But the other thing that always is in the back of my mind, I remember when I first had a look at the Mac back in the old 10.4 Tiger days. And at that stage, I was trying to find somebody that knew anything about accessibility to do with the Mac. And, of course, in Australia, there wasn't anyone. And I spent over 100 hours writing up an evaluation of the Mac, VoiceOver, sharing information. And from that time on, so 10.5, 6, 7, and 8, my main goal, I guess in the back of my mind, is to always to make sure that if there's anything new coming out with Apple products, I want to make damn sure that information's available out there for anybody that needs it, because I know that when I originally started off, there was nothing out there. So I guess both for Vision Australia and myself, that's the main reason we get out there and produce all these demonstrations.
That's one of the most wonderful things about the Apple products is that it's ready to go right out of the box. You don't have to wait for anything to be developed except maybe for the training materials. And you really hit the nail on the head, I think, by having those ready for Mountain Lion. And they weren't too detailed that one would get bogged down, but they were detailed and experiential enough that you could immediately see how to go about getting things running with the new notification center, or how to get things synced up between your notes, you know, your iPhone notes and your Mac notes and so forth. So, I mean, really enjoyed those, and I'm glad you provide that service. And it sounds like you do get to do those kinds of things, at least to some extent, as part of your job. I realize maybe these were sort of done during some time off, but you actually have a job, it sounds like, where you not only answer people's questions, but you're able to provide this kind of information.
I guess sometimes people assume that because you're a techie, geeky, high technology type person that you're all gung-ho all the time. And the funny thing about it is that as part of my job, it's really sometimes to say to people, I really don't think you need a computer, because sometimes people ring me up and they say, look, I want to talk to my friend overseas all the time. And they say, and my family and friends say that I should probably get a computer and I should get a screamer and I should get Skype and I should get broadband. And I say, well, what's wrong with ringing up your provider, your telephone company, and say, can I try and get a really cheap deal on ringing overseas so I can talk to my friend, you know, once or twice a week or once a month or whatever it might be? Why do you need a computer that's going to sit there? It might be gathering dust, it might be frustrating, you might feel like throwing it out the window. So sometimes I will definitely say to people, look, honestly, I don't think you need a computer. And people in the office sometimes, because I'm in an open plan office, get quite shocked, because it's like, oh my God, David Woodbridge is telling somebody that maybe a computer system or a smartphone is not appropriate. But for some people, technology is not appropriate, or something very simple might be a better idea. For example, you know, rather than getting a light probe app for your iPhone to tell if the lights are on or off, go and get one that is basically a battery-operated one that you hold in your hand. You turn it on, it beeps, you turn it off. Hey, presto, you've just determined whether the lights are on or off.
One of my favorite topics is this issue that you're raising. I actually did my dissertation research on this topic, which is how rehabilitation professionals go about evaluating which technology is appropriate for which client. And It sounds like that is something that you are also concerned about when you talk to people. And I'm curious, what are some of the major criteria that you use when you're talking to that person to try to decide what might work for that person?
I tend to take a very simplistic approach to it in some ways. My first question always is, what is your need? What do you want to do with this technology or this computer equipment or this high-tech stuff? So what's your primary need? And then, so let's say, for example, they want to write an email. I say, well, fine, okay, you want to send a letter or an email to your friends overseas. But then I'll say to people, okay, let's look at the possible solutions that you could probably try to do that. And the computer's one of them. What are some of the other solutions that you could think of? And then, so we'll go through maybe a telephone, maybe writing a letter as in handwriting if they're low vision, maybe using a video magnifier, closed circuit television, maybe using an old tape recorder back in the days, et cetera, et cetera. And then after we've gone through a number of solutions, normally I say to people, look, let's try and keep our ideas maybe to about four or five, because if we start getting too many, we're going to get bogged down.
Right.
And then I say, look, based on these four or five different ideas that we've got for you to be able to actually fulfill your need, which one do you feel most comfortable with? And they'll pick one of those ones that's most comfortable, maybe one or two. And then we'll go through and we'll say, okay, so in real life, how would you go about this with that particular choice you've made? And then at the end of that time, I then say, okay, so do you feel comfortable with our idea that this would be the best way to go? Because one thing I absolutely do not do with anybody, and I guess this is my background as a social worker, I never tell anybody to do anything. It's always a person's decision. I see myself as a facilitator. I've got the knowledge and the skills and the experience of all the ideas and all the equipment. What I don't have, though, is that person's experience, how they go about their life, how they think and feel. So hopefully with them coming with their life, me coming with my experience, both of us together arrive at a solution that we couldn't have got separately together. So I always take that method. And then I always say, fine, too, when people have felt that they've made a decision and it's their own decision, they're more likely to stick with it.
Yes, and they feel more empowered because absolutely. It's been their decision. And so yes. you've allowed them to take responsibility for that, which way too often in the rehabilitation field, someone else takes the responsibility, unfortunately, and the technology arrives and it just sits on the desk because mm-hmm. it wasn't really the person's idea. It isn't really their interest or their passion. So I'm really happy to hear how you go about that and to hear that you use an approach that mainly takes the needs of the person into consideration. That seems like that's so important to me.
Sometimes, and I know rehab organizations and including Vision Australia, we sometimes get tarred as, you know, we're a JAWS screen reader vendor or we're a ZoomText vendor or whatever else. But, you know, most of the staff and as far as most of the adaptive technology help desk staff are concerned, we're there to get the best fit to the person. Now, sometimes on the phone, and if it's fairly complicated person's lifestyle or their needs, I will then say, well, look, based on our chat, I probably think you really need to go and have an assessment on either your low vision or more things around your life in general. So not just the technology. And I normally then put them through to the, you know, our customer service desk for an assessment to be done face to face. I'm just very scary when I hear people say, well, you're a blind person, therefore you should use X, or your low vision, therefore you should use Y. It's like, geez, if I took that approach, one, I wouldn't have a job because we could just write up a fact sheet and say, right, your low vision, there you go, you're blind, there you go, off you go, no more job, no more assessment.
Yeah, unfortunately, way too often, if it's not exactly that approach, it is more that shotgun approach that's taken, well, you know, just get this or just get that, without really doing the kind of assessment that I think needs to be done. I'm curious about a couple things, though. One, I was wondering whether or not, given that you and I are both really into Apple technology and mainstream technology, do you ever encourage people based on your assessment of them to get involved with some of the adaptive technology that is specialized, like maybe a Braille Sense or a Braille Note or something like that?
I do. I guess my main issue behind that sort of recommendation, and I always take care to make sure I cover it, is to make sure that whatever device it is, whether it's custom or mainstream, is that the person has the support to be able to use the product. So, you know, it's fine for me to say go off and use a BrailleSense because I think it's really fantastic, or a BrailleNote or a U2 or a PlexTalk Pocket or whatever else. But so, for example, a lot of people bring up and say, well, you know, what Daisy player should I have? And one of my questions is, okay, so if you've got this particular Daisy player, do you have families or friends, or do you have a local Vision Australia office, or do you ring up the help desk a lot? How are you going to manage to be able to use this product when you need support? Because it's one thing getting it, it's another thing using it. And I always think about, and this goes for the web and any technology, just because something is technically and accessibility-wise doable does not mean it's functional,
right,
or easy to use.
Right.
So I guess that's for my help desk, because if I recommend somebody go and use something, I don't want that person then calling me back 50 times in a row because I haven't either explained myself properly or I've given them the wrong idea or the wrong solution. So my first thing is always to be very careful about the person's support mechanism on how they're going about using that device. So if somebody rang me up in the back of Whoop Whoop somewhere and said, I want to buy an Apple, let's say for a Mac, for example, I'd say, okay, well, tell me about your family. What do your family use? Oh, my family uses Windows. Okay, so if you get a Mac and your family uses Windows, how are you going to go about learning the Mac when all your family and relatives use Windows?
Right.
And then that makes a person think. Now, look, if they choose to go for the Mac, I then say, well, look, that's your choice. But remember that your support is then going to be limited. Or another scenario is if someone brings up and says, I want to use a Mac and I'm about to start a job, and I say, well, what's the workplace using? They say, oh, the workplace is using Microsoft Office, Microsoft Windows, etc. Then the issue becomes about the fact that, okay, so you're going to have to learn two operating systems and two screen readers.
Right.
How do you think you're going to manage? And again, it's just going through the whole scenario business. But my big thing is always support. How is that person going to be able to use that product when they're by themselves and don't have me or anyone else helping them?
Yeah, I think it's a critical issue. And I'm glad to hear you talking so much about it, because that's what's been missing in a lot of cases, is that training and support. We need to get even better at providing that. And it does make me curious about Vision Australia. What is that exactly? I mean, is it a government agency, or is it a private agency, or how does this fabulous resource operate in Australia?
Well, it's actually, the Vision Australia is actually a charity. We've got 36 branches, and it's basically a rehabilitation type service. So we offer different services. We offer services to children and their families. We offer services to people in the workplace. We offer services to people in education. So, for example, university, we offer support. We offer support in schools, so primary and high school. We offer support when people are retired and they still want to live their lives independently. So basically, we offer daily living support. You know, simple things like how to dial a telephone,
yes,
how to make a cup of tea. You know, I remember somebody coming into Vision Australia back then, in those days, it was called the Royal Blind Society, and saying, I want my wife to learn a computer. And this lady had just recently gone blind. And my first thing out of my mouth was, right, so your wife's just kind of gone blind. How is she coping with the rest of her life? And he said, oh, well, you know, I've got to do everything for her. She can't make a cup of tea, can't find a way to the post box, gets lost near the clothesline. And I said, well, maybe before you sort out the computer stuff, maybe we'd probably want to look at the rest of her life in general, so that she can feel independent and you don't feel tied down because you've got to help her all the time. So little things like that. And so plus other things, we offer, like I said, workplace employment support. We offer library services, the Adaptive Technology Help Desk, the Adaptive Technology Podcasts. We hold an exhibition now every year, which is held in three main states. So Victoria, it's Melbourne, New South Wales, it's Sydney, and Queensland, it's Brisbane. And that's a technology expo held on a Friday and Saturday to showcase all the adaptive technology stuff that's currently available. So things like speech, large print, OCR, optical character recognition, closed circuit televisions, Android phones, iPhones, Kindles, everything that's possibly that blind or low vision people can get their hands on, we try and demonstrate it to our customers, you know, both on a face-to-face group basis or at these technology expos. So it covers quite a lot.
So technology is obviously an important component of Vision Australia, but it sounds like it's only one component, and it's really a pretty holistic service that deals with the whole person, and that's exciting. I wish we had more services like that here in the U.S. That's a really neat thing to hear about.
Our primary goal in the help desk, and I mentioned this before, was that if the person's need is more than a one-off talk to the help desk, then I will inevitably, and all the staff will, then redirect that caller back to the help desk to have a referral for home, for education, or for employment. And look, sometimes the person says, no, I don't want to talk now. But at least we've said to them, look, when you feel more comfortable or you've got some space to have a bit of a think about things, then, you know, please feel free to ring back. So we don't say to people, you know, thou shalt have a referral now.
Right.
Right. It's like, you're blind or low vision. You'll do what you're told.
Right.
And look, most people say, look, yes, I would like to have a referral and, you know, be able to cope with things. Because some people don't realize, I've had lots of people ring up and they say, look, I'm 85 years old. I want to keep reading. And I say, well, have you heard about the talking book Daisy service from the Vision Australia Library?
Right.
And of course they say, well, no, I haven't. I said, well, guess what you can do? And then we talk about the library service and the Daisy books and the fact that you can still read your newspapers and all that sort of stuff. And I then put them through to the library. But it's just little things like that. Or people bring up and they say, oh, I want to be able to read a book and I want to do it easily. And my friends recommended I get a Kindle. Can you tell me a bit more about a Kindle? And then we sit down and have a chat over the phone and have a talk about the Kindle. So, you know, it's not just the fact that, you know, me, myself, talk about Apple. On the help desk, it's basically anything goes.
Is the help desk very busy? I mean, do you get a lot of calls?
It's a bit hard to average. I think most of us average around about 15 to 20 calls a day, and there's three of us.
Wow.
So I'd say an average to 50 or 60 calls a day, 5 days a week. But we also get emails to athelp@visionaustralia.org. So that's the email address. And funny enough that, you know, the help desk technically is supposed to be for Australia, not for Vision Australia clients as such, but for people that I guess that come in contact with Vision Australia. But sometimes I've had an email and I've responded to them. It's getting a little bit complicated to go via email, and I'll say, look, do you mind if I just ring you up and have a chat about this issue? And they go, well, I'm sorry, but I didn't tell you this, but I'm actually in Canada.
Oh, okay.
So it's like, oh.
Actually get calls from all over the world sometimes, it sounds like.
I do. Yeah, we've had calls from Canada, from the US, get quite a few calls from emails from the UK, so from, you know, England, Switzerland. I've had one person comment on one of my podcasts once saying, can you try and speak English? Because I'm here in, I can't remember where they were, but they said, but I find your style of English very hard to listen to.
Yeah, I guess that's what happens when you get a worldwide audience. It's the price you pay, right? It sounds like a great service and a thing that is something that people can reach easily by phone and can get their questions answered, and it's really cool to hear about it. I'm curious, though, about something else you said when you were introducing yourself. You mentioned that you were kind of an accessibility ambassador of sorts with Apple in Australia. Tell us a little bit about that. What's that all about?
I am. So a couple of probably several years ago, I mentioned the fact that I was going on this quest for Tiger when Tiger came out. And probably a couple of years too after that, somebody mentioned something about Apple, and I went and checked it out, and I just thought, well, you know, there's Apple in Australia and this doesn't make sense to me. So I rang up this person and lo and behold, I got in contact with one of the education marketing managers at Apple Australia, who I've actually been working with ever since for the last 3 years. And what Apple doesn't do, and for the life of me, I don't know why, because I think they should, but Apple never sings and dances about how good the accessibility in all the Apple products actually is. And what I've been doing with these podcasts and writing information sheets and fact sheets is to say to people, look, this is an alternative to Windows. This is an alternative to smartphones. This is an alternative to MP3 players. This is an alternative to digital set-top boxes. This is what it can do out of the box. And for me to be able to do that, what's happened is that I then do workshops or presentations on behalf of Apple Australia. So I've just finished a conference back in May that I spoke about, you know, reading options for using Apple products on the iPad. I did some workshops last year at our technology expo, and I think over those three states of Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland, I think we covered about 700 to 800 people came through those workshops because people are interested and people don't find the information from anywhere else. So, and the other thing that's really cool about working with Apple Australia is that I don't get paid for this, so it's purely voluntary, is the fact that when a new product comes out, I can ring up Apple Australia and say, can I loan a product for a short period of time to let me evaluate it? And if I think it's really fantastic, then I'll do a podcast on it. So, I mean, most of my equipment I do own myself, but occasionally when something's probably a little bit pricey, I think, oh, I probably really wouldn't use that for home or for work. Then I tend to loan it from Apple Australia and then just evaluate it and then send it back. So that works really nicely. And sometimes Apple Australia will say, you know, would you mind speaking to the media about accessibility on our behalf? And, you know, I'm more than willing to speak to the print media, to radio, or to anybody about, you know, technology from the Apple's perspective. So it works really nicely from both ends. I get the equipment to evaluate and to play with and to evaluate, and Apple Australia has a continuing ambassador for accessibility in the blind and low vision space. There are other ambassadors that look after more to do, I guess, with education, with augmentative communication, that sort of stuff. But I'm primarily the sort of the blind, I guess, voiceover type person, if you like.
It's just a continuation or an extension of what you do with the help desk, it sounds like, but with the backing and support of Apple, which seems like a great combination. So that's pretty exciting to hear about.
It works really nicely.
Sounds like you you do then a couple of podcasts. You do one for Vision Australia, I guess, which covers a lot of the Apple technology, but you also do your own personal podcast. Am I getting that right? That's the flavor I get.
Correct. That's right. So, for example, the initial podcasts go up on the Vision Australia website. So that's basically, if you like, www.visionaustralia.org/AT podcast. That's AT PODCASTS. And that's the primary source for our demonstrations. Hopefully, when we update the Vision Australia website later on this year, we'll actually have a stream or a podcast feed. So then they'll become, if you like, true, quote, podcasts. At the moment, you have to download them. Then I have my own feed, which is the Apple and Other Technologies podcast. And although if you stick David Woodbridge into iTunes, you'll actually find my podcast. It'll come up with that name. And that feed is basically the same as Vision Australia that I put on there, but sometimes I'll have a thought or I want to do a demo of something that I don't think is quite appropriate for the Vision Australia podcast. So, for example, I originally did one for another podcast that I'm currently doing with now, which is Apple Viz website and their podcast stream, and I did one on Rubber Ducky. And unfortunately, in the Rubber Ducky demonstration, it has some vulgar language in it. And I just thought, well, if I edit it out of the podcast, it's not really a true representation of the game. Mm-hmm. And I can't really afford to put it up on that podcast page at Vision Australia because we have families and everybody else using that site. So I put it on my feed.
Yeah.
And we put it on AppleViz, but I didn't put it on the official Vision Australia one. So sometimes, you know, it's just picking and choosing. I'm going to do a podcast shortly, probably this week, on the Jambox from Jawbone, the little portable Bluetooth speaker, which is absolutely very cool and also talks to you. That's very nice. And, you know, that'll go on all of them. That'll go on the Vision Australia one, on my one, and on the AppleViz one. And the other one that also carries my podcasts is ACB Radio Main Menu, because for a long time they didn't have any content to do anything with Apple or the Mac in general. And, you know, once every now and again, they'll play one of my podcasts. So, for example, I think over the next couple of weeks or months, they'll be actually running all those initial 15 podcasts that I did.
Excellent.
Last week. So that's fun. So, yeah, so basically it's Vision Australia, it's my feed, it's AppleViz, and also it's ACB Radio Main Menu.
Well, you know, just in the last year or so, the AppleViz site, which is www.applevis.com, has become a real repository of information about apps, comments, blogs, podcasts, just a little bit of everything. And in fact, I predicted a few months ago that it was going to become one of the primary sources of information about Apple technology for people who are blind. And it seems like it's really moving in that direction. I know you've recently just gotten more involved with AppleViz. What do you do with them?
I have. So I'm one of the editors on the site now, as well amongst a group of other people who I must say are very, very keen and enthusiastic. And basically our job is to comment and, you know, submit app recommendations or to make comments to different things coming up on the blog, or, you know, to produce podcasts. And several months ago, I was asked to try to do more of a Mac presence on AppleViz, because it's not just for iOS, not just for the iPhone, iPod Touch or iPad, etc. It's for everything. So all my new, you know, all my new ongoing Mac demos or anything else that's Mac related will be going on the site. And my ongoing philosophy, particularly with AppleViz, is to try and do podcasts that are more inclusive of the technology and how you use it in your daily life. So that's why for some of those podcasts, I did the reminders for both the Mac and the iPhone. I did notes for both the Mac and the iPhone and so on, because it's not just a device or a piece of equipment in isolation. It's a tool that you use in your daily life.
Yes.
And that's the way I want my podcast to try and go towards that particular option, I guess, not the fact that, oh, look, this is a really cool bit of technology and it does this and that. The other thing, and by the way, it's got no relevance to your life, but I think it's really cool.
Right. Yeah, you don't want that, because really you want people to be able to get excited. And if I've learned anything from Apple, it's that it should be more about the user experience and what you can do with it than how many gigabytes it has and how much RAM it has. And so I think that's really great that you've taken that approach in those podcasts.
Well, that's right. So for example, I mean, I've got two little sighted boys. I've got a 7 and an 8-year-old, and
okay.
You know, I've got the Apple TV here as well, and we've got it both in the toy room and in the lounge room. And, you know, my son will come and sometimes say, "Oh, Dad, it's Saturday. Can I watch so and so off the Apple TV?" It's funny, my 7-year-old doesn't call it the Apple TV, he calls it the HDMI source.
Uh-huh. So I love it.
It's like, it's crazy. So I put it on the HDMI source, and the fact is I can hear what he's scrolling through on the movie that he wants to rent.
Yep.
We can both read it together. He reads it on the screen, I can listen to it, and we always check what the rating is. I mean, I've got parental control anyway, but we always check what the rating is, and we can start playing it. But I can do that all independently, or our household, we've got, you know, iPads and iPhones and iPod Touches and everything else. But it means if, for example, on the iPad, one of the boys' games stop playing, I can turn VoiceOver on by the good old triple-click home function, you know, exit the game or do something with the device and turn it back on again, and off we go. And my 8-year-old's even got to the stage now is where he wants to buy an app, and so we'll have a look on the App Store and we'll have a look at it together. And then he'll say, so hang on, Dad, I'll just turn VoiceOver on for you so you can put in your password for me. And then I put it in, and he just turns VoiceOver off. So the whole, you know, from the Apple TV to the iPhone to the iPad, the boys just see it as a normal everyday occurrence. The fact that they can turn speech on when Dad needs to use it, they turn it off. It's no big deal. It's just part of our daily life.
Yes, and that has got to be one of the most exciting things for me as well about Apple technology. I have a son. He's older than yours. He's 19, sophomore in college. And this afternoon, he and I went out and bought him a new hard drive, came home, backed up his MacBook Pro, and installed Mountain Lion on it for him. And I kind of talked him through how to go about getting his apps updated and doing the things that I thought need to be done before doing an install like that. But it's just so great, you know, that to be able to share in that process, exactly the same process that everyone else who installs Mountain Lion goes through. And it doesn't matter anymore if you're blind, because it all works for you. And that's just incredibly exciting to me.
No, it is. And look, I mean, you know, from, you know, picking up my wife's phone, she's got an iPhone, to be able to respond to her emails or messages when she's driving a car, you know, the Apple TV, the Nano, the iPads, the everything that Apple produces almost, I've actually got in this house at the moment.
Yeah, but I hear that.
It's just an integrated, you know, part of my life. And once every month on the Vision Australia radio, because Vision Australia's also got a radio station, believe it or not, I do a little 6-minute technology update. And unfortunately, I'm not too sure if I'm actually that's good or bad, but unfortunately, because Apple's so fast moving, I end up talking most about Apple products every month or so, because they've brought out a new thing. So, for example, when I do the talk this month for August, I'll be talking about, of course, our technology expo coming up the end of August and early September. But I'll also be talking about the fact how absolutely cool Mountain Lion is. So there's just, I don't know, I just don't know of any other accessible mainstream technology company that just makes their products so relevant to, you know, what we do in our daily life, both for home and for work.
Yeah, I agree. And I am excited to see some progress being made in Android with Jelly Bean. And I'm excited about some of the progress that HIMS is making with the Braille Sense and updating it, and some things that they're doing. That have kind of been fun for me to be part of all that this summer. But honestly, I haven't found anything that excites me personally anywhere near the level that the Apple technologies is. They have just, in my eyes at least, hit a home run when it comes to mainstream accessibility. And I just don't want to stop talking about it, because it really has changed my life, just as it has yours. You know, it's incredibly exciting. And it, the thing is, since it's always changing, always advancing, there's something to look forward to every month or every week sometimes. Mm. It never ends. You know, it's like Christmas all the time around here. It's just very exciting.
Indeed.
So I know that you've done podcasts on the details of Mountain Lion, and other people have, and I don't really want to spend a lot of our time going through its features and everything, but just in general, as I am, it sounds like you are excited about and enjoying Mountain Lion. I know you participated in some of the beta testing process. Can you tell us anything about what it was like to kind of be part of watching Lion be developed from an accessibility standpoint?
I had the privilege now to be in the Snow Leopard, Lion, and Mountain Lion beta testing for VoiceOver now over the last several years, and that's been a really fantastic thing, because you see the product VoiceOver grow, and, you know, it's just remarkable how well they actually integrate the screen reader into the operating system. And I just remember I did a blog comment to apply to someone on Apple Viz the other day, that I basically said, you know, because the screen reader is so integrated into the operating system, that some of the really cool features to do with Mountain Lion have got nothing to do with VoiceOver.
Yep.
It's the fact that they're integrated. So, for example, my really favorite one, I guess, is the dictation feature now, where you can dictate into Mountain Lion by first turning it on in System Preferences, a dictation option in System Preferences, and you can double tap the function key by default, say what you need to say, double tap it again, and hey presto, you've got your text there ready to go. And the notification center, where it really brings together the integration with your iOS devices, and that's for reminders, notes, and your messages, so your iMessages to other iOS or Mac devices. And I really like the closer integration between the desktop OS, if you like, and the mobile iOS, that it doesn't really matter what device I'm using now, that I can share my documents, my contacts, my notes, my bookmarks, my everything else between all my devices, whether they're Mac or iOS, via iCloud. And yes, sometimes it doesn't work the way it's supposed to, and sometimes I really do feel like standing on top of a very tall tower and say, my God, can't they get this technology right sometimes?
Yeah.
But overall, 95% of the time, it works. And and that's the main thing I like about it. And the fact that I don't have to fight with the screen reader, I don't lose control, I don't use tracking, I don't use this, I don't lose that. It just works. And the worst thing that happens to me, for example, with the Mac or the iOS, is that I either have to toggle VoiceOver on and off, or restart my iPhone or iPad, or restart the Mac. That's the worst thing that happens to me.
Right.
And then at the end of the day, if the whole thing really falls over, then we can independently, or I can independently, reinstall the operating system with VoiceOver. So
exactly,
I'm never held high and dry. I remember once I got this call from a person saying, I'm using Windows, and this was in the early 90s, but it hasn't changed that much, and saying, I've muted my sound in Windows. And back then, you could really only do it via the mouse, or if you knew what you were doing, you could run the program, hope that you're in the program, tap a few times, hit the spacebar, and hopefully unmute your sound.
Right.
And on the Mac, it's just a lot easier to get
absolutely
your voice and your sound back.
Well, it's not just that, but it's the fact that you can, as you said, install the operating system from scratch if you have to. You don't lose speech during the process. You're able to monitor it, tell what's going on, and do what you need to do. And to me, that's worth its weight in gold, because I love that level of independence. And so I kind of think Mountain Lion is a real step forward in terms of the way that it operates and the way that things are integrated. I know I listen to a ton of Apple podcasts, and some people have been worried that, it's becoming too iOS-like, but I think Apple's doing it right. I don't think Apple's taking the power away from the Mac. I think they're just bringing the two together in ways that make them work more seamlessly, and I really like that.
Depending on what task it is, I find myself maybe doing more of my notes on my Mac than syncing them over to my iPhone. But I find using Siri to then do my iMessages or reminders is sometimes a lot faster doing on the iPhone. So I guess with Mountain Lion now and iOS, and the new iOS is coming up later on this year, is the fact that I can pick now what the most efficient way of me performing a task is, and do it that way. So I'm not stuck on a particular platform anymore with, the iOS or the Mac. And that's what I'm really looking forward to now, is the fact that, as I said before, I can just switch depending on what I want to do. So the other big feature that I absolutely like at the moment, and this is for more presentations, is the fact that, on new Macs, I can use the Apple TV to send out what's on my Mac screen to, a projector or a big TV set, and people can see what's on my screen. And because with VoiceOver now, I can redirect the sound back away from my system default sound or Apple TV back to another device, such as my USB headset. It means that the only audio visual, or the only audio that the audience will be hearing, is the one that I want them to hear. They're not listening to my screen reader.
Yes, that is brilliant feature. I'm so glad to see that implemented the way that it is. And it's nice that you can just so easily switch that audio. I was a little afraid, I think, that maybe that would be overlooked, but they didn't. They got it in there, and I'm really glad about that.
They did. And the nice thing about it is that if you redirect something out to a source that's not active, if it doesn't talk and nothing happens in 30 seconds, it will revert back to your current audio setting, because there is nothing worse than losing speech on whatever device you're using. And, you know, the Mac, is, unless you confirm that that's what you want to do, then it'll come back and you won't lose speech. So, for example, sometimes I'll be sitting here thinking, I think I might just want to listen to my Mac on our lounge on Apple TV. And, you know, for example, my family might be out there on another HDMI channel, maybe watching Foxtel or some other system, and it won't work because the Apple TV will be quite happily sending it, but I won't get any sound. But if I just wait, it'll come back to my, you know, my current internal speakers and my current headset. So
exactly.
So it's all nice and safe. You can't do anything that you're going to lose speech or endanger your play time for the fact that you've just stuffed up your computer.
But see, that's the kind of detail that Apple is known for, is the little things that make this really a pleasure to work with and keep you from getting stuck with no speech and having to get someone to come in and click a mouse button or unmute something, as you said earlier. You know, it doesn't happen nearly as often with the Apple products. And because they've carried that same level of attention to detail into making their products accessible, it's never been done like that before. We've never had a mainstream company do this before, and that's just really exciting.
I mean, I still have my faithful Victor Stream, and I still have my, you know, my PacMate Braille display, and
yep.
You know, I have lots of devices, but the nice thing about it is that I can plug those devices into my Mac or, you know, into my iOS devices, and they just work. And, you know, yesterday, for example, some person had a problem getting some photos off their SD card on their digital camera. And I just said, well, just give me your camera, give me a USB stick, whack the SD card in the Mac, copy them over to the USB stick, gave them back to them. And they said, but, you know, one, how did you do that? Because you can't see, blah, blah, blah. And two, how come it works so fast? I said, because it just does. It's designed to work. And I mean, I know people say that Mac users or Apple people, you know, bash the hell out of Microsoft and Windows and everything else, but I swear to this day that, I don't know, my adaptive technology and my mainstream come together a lot closer on the Apple than it's ever done on Windows. And because I remember when I had to do stuff with my VictorStream on Windows or my screen reader stuff, didn't matter what screen reader it was or what device or what version of Windows, I just had to feel that I sort of had to fight that little bit extra to keep everything running. Whereas, you know, on our, you know, the two MacBook Pros here, I've got my Mac Air, our iMac, they just run. And like I said, you know, 95% of the time, it's always working. And I just always felt with Windows that I never got that level of functionality, you know, 95% of the time.
Yep, I have had the same experience. Well, David, as we kind of draw toward the end here, if we sort of turn it around just a little bit and maybe think about the future, what doesn't your Apple technology do for you that you wish it would or that you would like it to? Is there anything at this point?
There's several things that it doesn't do, and two of them have really irritated me from the word dot when I started working with all this Apple stuff. So nothing is all rosy in the Apple garden. One of the things is we still can't access tables on the Mac yet properly. I mean, yes, I know there's a workaround, but if I was to try and do a table by default in Pages or TextEdit, VoiceOver doesn't currently work with that. So that's number one. Number two, I guess, is the fact that we still really don't have good access to PDF files as far as structured tag information like headers and tables.
Right.
So I guess that's the second thing. So they're probably the two. And, of course, you know, the number third is that we still don't have access to Microsoft Office itself, but that's more Microsoft's issue than Apple's.
Right.
So that's probably on the desktop side of things. On the iOS side of things, I'd love it if one day that we could get a really, really good OCR application that worked with the camera really well.
Yes.
Because all the apps that still come out, it's still got a lot to be desired. You don't know whether they're in focus or if you're holding it, you know, far enough away from the paper or if it's got the whole paper in the view, stuff like that. So, I mean, we're getting there, but as far as I'm concerned, we're still a long way off to some extent.
Right. And you know, I always caution people to really think hard about what they need to do with their Apple devices to make sure that they have a way to do those things that they need to get done. And if you're in a position where you have to work with Microsoft Office, and if you're in a position where you have to work a lot with tables and those kinds of formatting type issues, you know, right now, and you're a blind person, the Mac may not be for you. At the same time, though, you know, the reality of it is, and I'll admit, I don't have to write in Microsoft Office on a Mac. If I have to do it, I have a Windows machine at work that I can do it on. But at the same time, most of the things that I want to do, I've found very good and efficient ways to do them on my Mac. And so, you know, I get it that there are some real gotchas there. And I think you're exactly right about the ones that you mentioned. But at the same time, I always encourage people to think about, you know, like it always is when you're blind, how are you going to adapt? How are you going to make this transition? How are you going to make this work for you? And so I think we've come full circle. I think we're back really to where we started with this podcast, in that people have got to take responsibility for themselves and they've got to really decide, this is what I need to do with this device and this is how I'm going to go about it. And of course, people need help figuring that out. But you know, that's where I think that's where people ought to start when they're trying to make these decisions.
That's right. And look, the main three things that people use a computer for is basically emailing, word processing, and web browsing. And, you know, they're all covered extremely nicely on the Mac. And I could also say, I guess one little thing about, you know, things that do work extremely nicely on the Mac is, of course, access to iTunes. Because on the Windows side of things, people say, my screen reader is not tracking the focus, or it's not activating properly, or it's missing out of control. And you sort of sit back a bit smugly sometimes and go, well, it's not a problem on my Mac, though.
Right, right, because iTunes works great on the Mac with VoiceOver.
It does. It's absolutely lovely. So, yes, but look, you're right. I mean, when I come to do tables like you do, I mean, I've got a Windows computer at work that I use at work. But when I come home, I can do my podcasting, my Skyping, my iTunes, my DVD burning, my word processing, my Twittering, my Facebooking, my OCRing, everything is absolutely done on the Mac at home. I actually don't have a Windows machine at home anymore. And I remember one day on the help desk, I'll quickly tell the story with the fact that somebody around, they said, look, can you be really honest with me and say that, you know, if you've got a Mac at home, you probably run Windows on a dual boot system or you run in a virtual machine, because I can't really accept the fact that you're a real Mac person, that you must be, you know, sneakily using Windows. And I said, look, honestly, I do not have or need a Windows computer at home. I need a Windows computer at work because I use Microsoft Office. We've got a client database that's Windows-based, et cetera, et cetera. But honestly, I don't have a Windows machine at home. And, you know, it was quite funny that it's almost like this, oh, come on, you know, this it can't be really that good.
Yeah.
And the actual fact is, it is that good.
Yeah, you know, it's true for us too. We don't have any Windows machines in the house anymore. I do have VMware and Windows 7 on my Mac, and I do use it. But the only thing I use it for is to run access the System Access Mobile Network and to access Zello.
I actually use Google Chrome on my Mac to listen to the described audio content on System Access for the described audio content. And, you know, I access the rest of it all via the website for System Access, because I've still got my original six System Access licenses.
Yeah.
But the other program that I absolutely love from Serotek, of course, is my OCR program. And I really do think it's worth a mention, which is DocuScan, because I can scan documents at work on my Windows machine. I can scan documents at home on my Mac, and I can share them through, you know, the System Access SAMNet network.
Yes.
And it's wonderful. And, you know, I can access PDF files that way. I can do DAISY MP3, large print output. It's absolutely fantastic program. So, you know, that would be the closest that I would ever need coming to a Windows machine if I really wanted to run System Access again as a screen reader. But because I can do it via the website, I can still quite happily use DocuScan and Google Chrome.
Right. Well, that's the beauty of DocuScan is it runs equally well on the Windows and the Mac platform. And if you have a license for it, you can use it on either or both. And I think that was a brilliant move that Saratech made with that. And I did want to second your idea, too, about using DocuScan for PDFs. You were saying that PDFs aren't great on the Mac at this point, and they aren't. But with DocuScan, dealing with them is a whole lot better because you can simply do OCR on them and have them translated into text and work with them that way. And most of them work pretty well that way.
Since we gave Saratech a bit of a flag, there's only one other product that I'd really love to mention for today too, and that's that new app that's come out recently called Flexi.
Yes.
Which is F-L-E-K-S-Y, and that's basically keyboard pattern recognition typing on your iOS device. And yes, it is $15. And yes, people think it's a little bit pricey, but I can absolutely say now that on my iOS device, I have no need when I'm on the train or the plane or at a conference to drag out my Bluetooth keyboard or to start whispering into Siri to take notes on my iPhone now or my iPad. I literally get Flexi out, run the application, if you like, on my iPhone or my iPad, do my pattern typing quickly, and then I can copy it or Twitter it or do whatever I like with it. And I think, you know, the Flexi app to me is one of those applications that I still believe personally is a bit of a game changer for typing on the iPhone or the iPad or the iPod Touch for that matter.
Well, the thing that I love about Flexi is that you can type on it much the same way a sighted person types on an iOS device. And I hear my son and wife over there just clicking away when they're typing a text message and moving really fast. And you can approximate that to a great extent with Flexi. I agree that it is a game changer, and they're making constant improvements to it. And gosh, you know, if you have to decide one day whether to buy a pizza or buy Flexi, I'd say forget the pizza that day and buy Flexi. You know, that's about what it boils down to, really.
Indeed, yes. I mean, it's, you know, like over here in Australia even, I mean, yes, you're right. I mean, two pizzas for $15 versus, you know, $15 for extremely good access to keyboarding is, you know, a very easy decision to make. I know which one I would get, and that would be the program.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm quite happy to have the pizza.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, this has been delightful, David. I really appreciate you taking some time to come on this podcast. Is there any parting words or any contact information or anything that you would like to leave people with?
If they want to still access the AT podcast from Vision Australia, that's still visionaustralia.org/AT podcasts. If you stick in David Woodbridge in iTunes, you'll find my Apple and other technologies podcasts. If you want to get in contact with me via AppleViz and leave comments about the Mac or my podcast or iOS device or anything else, that's fine as well. You can respond to ACB Radio main menu. You can also follow me on Twitter if you like, and that's just at, and it's D Woodbridge. So it's DWOODBRIDGE. So David Woodbridge. And, you know, it's nice to get some feedback on all the podcasts that, I mean, I produce them and I think they're okay, but it's also nice to people to say, well, you know, it would have been good if you could have explained that a little bit more, or yes, I found them really helpful. And I guess the main thing that I'd like to finish off by saying is the fact that there's no right one bit of technology. I mean, I've got a really good eclectic collection of technology, not just Apple here at home, but other custom devices that I use all the time. And, you know, the best thing you can do is talk to people, experiment, get ideas. There's no one right hardware device and there's no one right software device. So I think the more people talk and the more we share ideas, the better off we are in our daily lives, whether that's for, you know, for home, school or employment. So, you know, get out there, have fun, don't be afraid to ask questions and don't be afraid to have a go at technology. But the worst thing that's going to happen is that it won't work.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. I really agree with you. And I use both mainstream and specialized technology, personally and professionally. I still think in some situations there's a place for both. I don't feel a need to argue one side or the other, or that one has to go away, or that, you know, I get it that there are cost issues to consider and there are other issues, but like we've been saying throughout this podcast, be careful in evaluation and take your time and take a look at what's out there and figure out what really feels right to you. And that's what you go with, because you want something that in the end you're going to want to use, you're going to be excited about, and you're going to be happy to work with every day. So that's really what it's all about. Thanks again, David. I really appreciate you being on here. And if someone would like to get in touch with me about the Tech Doctor podcast, feel free to drop an email to techdoctor123@gmail.com. And until next time, so long from the Tech Doctor.